Alrighty, Vital listeners, this is Jason Schroeder. We've made it to day 4 of the Sea Otter Classic. The way I'm walking is blocked off by the media center. If you've never been here, Sunday is downhill racing in the morning, and then the whole venue starts to shut down pretty quick. A lot of consumers are heading out, the weekend's over. But my goal is to try to catch a few people that are still standing in their booths that I haven't gone by yet, get some more cool conversations, and wrap up another year at Sea Otter. Here we go. They're starting to tear down all of the bike valet area, so I'm doing some extra walking right now, and had me reminiscing on when I used to work for brands, and Sundays were always the longest day because you'd still show up here at 8 a.m., show starts at 9, and then they don't let you start bringing in your vehicles or start tearing down your booth until the day actually ends. And so it's just a super long day, the last day, waiting for everything to officially stop. And then it's a mad dash of cars and trailers and like events people that come in for the last day to break down booths. So definitely gets hectic. I'm glad I'm not doing that. I just get to jump in, do my thing today, hopefully bounce out of here a little bit early.
Light show, Mac? Is that what's going on?
Gosh. Is that how we start this? I'm like, I'm over at Crank Brothers, and if you've been digesting Vital MTB news and media for an extended period of time, you'll recognize this voice of Mr. Brandon Terman. How are you?
Hey guys, it's been a minute. Happy to be chatting here with Jason again.
Hell yeah. It's the fact that I mention audio and you go straight to slideshow, Spomer will get a kick out of, because I bring it up all the time. I loved him, and he's anti them. It's like they're too much of a lift for whatever the amount of views they get. But in hindsight, I've been doing daily podcasts with these. Would have been cool just to like throw all this audio over a bunch of photos. So maybe it'll come back. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll get that tune going on here.
Uh-huh, right. Yeah, everybody, it's all, it's like the elevator music that everybody loved.
Yeah, should have made that a ringtone.
I know. I don't know if you watched the most recent 17 Questions with Danny Hart, but we lost the music rights for that intro song. And so Spomer like hummed it. He like redid it himself. And it actually sounds pretty good. But a lot of people were like, bring back the original audio. It's too good.
I don't know. The hum version by Spoons might be pretty rad, too.
It's not bad. So many talents, that man. Well, what have you been up to, man? I mean, you've been at Crank Brothers for a little bit now, but I don't know how many people know that. Like, what's your role with Crank Brothers?
Yeah, so, you know, before Vital, I went to school as a mechanical engineer, and Vital was incredible. I mean, it was a remarkable time. I had 10 years to ride all the things, see what worked well and see what didn't. And I had the chance to, with Crank Brothers, actually go back into an engineering role. So for a year and a half, I was a mechanical engineer with Crank, and then now I'm doing product management. So
Right. It's
kind of completing the picture and bringing all those things together, the engineering, the time on all the different bikes and the different components. And yeah, it's been quite the learning process, though. Let me tell you what, like, I've gained a lot of respect for how much effort and time goes into making a product. And yeah, excited to share new stuff with the world now.
Sick. And that's a question I've had since I'm now doing what you did for so many years, is looking back now that you're outside of the media world and testing products, what's one thing you miss about that life, and what's one thing that you're so happy to not be involved with anymore?
We'll start with not happy.
Okay.
or rather, like, happy I'm no longer.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
The late night embargoes, that was rough on the just the daily, you know, your life.
Mental health.
Yeah, mental health. But man, what do I miss? I miss product launches with brands. It's such an incredible experience. Like, you get to go to cool places, ride the new things, and experience new trails, and really sit down with the companies and learn what went into different things. And chatting, really, too, with all the, you know, the engineers and product guys that are at each of those companies is pretty special. And as a media guy, you get a lot of good access to that.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's rad. What, man, we were talking about this last night over drinks at a dinner, but I have so many questions for you, but we're going to save it for a podcast in the future because we're going to rope you into it.
Let's do it.
It's gonna happen. It's going to happen.
You hear that, Spomer? I'm back in. We'll chat again.
And the crowd goes wild. Thank you.
Yeah, cheers.
You let me know, I don't know what you guys have... Johan's done a lot on the shoes on the trail series and stuff.
Yep. We've more or less touched or covered most things you guys have coming out. I know the kind of SOS tool stuff was the most recent thing, but I think that'll be in a gear show coming up. Do you want to run through that, though? I think that stuff's really cool and kind of goes under the radar as stuff that people don't prioritize as much as they should.
Yeah, they definitely don't. There's always that guy that shows up unprepared. And, you know, the intent with the SOS series was really to think about all the issues that you might have on the trail, and here's a solution for it. So you bolt one of those on your bike, and you should be covered in the event of eventual guaranteed issue.
Do you guys have a spot to hold an Axis battery?
That's a great question. We don't. But
not to
never say never.
Not to put you on the spot, but I think about nowadays, like, what is one of the more common things I deal with in like a group ride?
Yeah,
it's like, oh, my Axis battery's dead.
It's toast. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is there some like kind of modularity built into these? As far as I know, like the bottle cages, you have a few different options.
Mm-hmm.
Does it all build off of the same cage first, and then you can add or detract from what tools go onto that?
There is a little bit of modularity. So if you start with one of the more basic models, the BC2, that's our basic bottle cage, or our TS2, which is our basic tube stash.
Okay.
You can add later on if you want to. You can add the full toolkit and kind of expand that. The initial BC2, TS2, those do include a full-size tire lever, tire plugs, which is super convenient when you need a quick fix out there. But there is a bit of modularity. The tools themselves that are used throughout each of the different kits are the same, so you'll see those carry through the line, and you can definitely do a little mix and match. But yeah, we tried to think of ways. You know, not everybody has an accessory mount.
Yep.
So the TT17 is fantastic if you do have an accessory mount underneath that top tube. You can be seated on your bike, reach down, grab the tools that you need right away. And then the bottle cage is actually the number one in terms of sales right now. It's,
oh, cool.
People are really digging it just because everybody's got a bottle cage spot. And
yeah,
it's that all-in-one solution. You're good to go.
Sweet. What do you have going on product-wise that maybe you could hint at, you're stoked on? Or what about just things in 24 that you're proud to finally have to the market?
Oh, man, it's I'm really stoked on what the shoe team's been working on. It's really cool to have the new trail series live. The Candy series is also is exciting for us. You know, we're kind of missing that product in our lineup to address the needs of the XC gravel rider, and the Candy shoe really does that nicely now, and it brings that same just clean aesthetic and style that CB has in all their products to that rider. So yeah, super pumped on that, and yeah, we've got some really cool things in the works.
Sick.
Yeah,
stay tuned. Thank you. I got George here from Crank Brothers. Did you go to all the World Cups?
I go to the majority of them.
Okay.
We're trying.
Yeah, you got boots on the ground at races.
Yeah.
Four wheel.
I'm in the B zone.
Yes. You do, yeah. Actually, why don't you tell people what a B zone Lomer is first?
So a B zone Lomer is, so the B zone is a section of the track next to the racetrack that's taped off away from spectators so that the media and like coaches, team managers, line people can kind of work on the side of the track without being on the track, but also without having to fight, you know, like the spectators.
Yep.
So it's obviously these tracks are pretty long to walk, and like sometimes like a media guy or a team manager will want to look at, you know, like the third corner and then the last jump. Mm-hmm. And obviously like walking top to bottom every day sucks. Mm-hmm. So everyone starts to ride. So now like there's enough of us who ride that we'll kind of like kind of skid in a trail. So like it slowly evolves. And so some of them are pretty good, some of them not so much. Like the side of the Leargang Woods is pretty exciting. The Lenzerheide B-Zone Loma is pretty good. Yeah, they're coming around. It's hit and miss, but it's exciting.
That's amazing. I love that. All right, Fort William coming up here rapidly.
Yeah.
Let's hear predictions for all four classes, juniors, men and women, and elite men and women.
Okay, so junior women, I'm going the new Kiwi girl Ellie on Union. She's been doing crazy times, like really good times. I think she won an elite race, and yeah, the Joe Bowman, our guy, has been he's become the talent scout of the pits. So somehow, yeah, he's found another ripper. So I think, like, based on the time she's done already, like, if she keeps it together, I think she'll be really good. Junior men's, like, tough because a lot of the, like, fast guys moved out. You know, like, Henry Kiefer's gone, Pinkerton's gone. There's a lot of people moved up. So I think, like, there's two new, there's on Kommissar Markov, there's two twins who are going really fast. One of them won an elite race again. I think he beat Dylan Levesque by like a second on a really easy track.
Wow.
So like he could be really good.
Yeah.
I think Chris Hauser like showed crazy speed last year and then just fell off a lot. Mm-hmm. So he could be like, if he puts the pieces together, I think everyone was pretty excited to see Acer, but it sounds like he's not going to be there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think junior men's like really open. Like I think it could be a lot of people. But yeah, those guys, I think if Hauser keeps it together, we could be on for another one.
Sweet.
Elite women is hard to bet against Valley.
Yeah.
Like, I think it'll be really interesting to see how Cammy comes back. Like, she's so mentally strong, so I think she's not really going to struggle, like, putting the pieces back together. Like, I think that's where her advantage has been in the past. She's so mentally strong and just really just gets the job done. So she might just get right back to it. She did well at a French race. She won a French race the other day against some good competition. But Valley's speed so far has been, has been really hard to match. I think Gracie Hemstreet showed a lot of pace at Hardline. She was the first girl to do a full run at Hardline, and then Louise Ferguson did a full run as well. So they're going to be good. So yeah, I think it's definitely Valley versus the rest. Mm-hmm. But I think it'll be really cool to see Cammy come back. I'm not sure if Miriam Nicole's coming back. She got picked up a thumb injury in New Zealand, so we'll see. Elite men's the struggle. So, I mean, it could just be Charlie and Kolb again. Like, the Atherton boys, like, they were unreal in World Champs, and, you know, it wasn't their results. It was pouring rain. But Fort William, you know, like, you've raced there, like, it's basically the same track in the rain. It wasn't like it was a British favouring thing or anything. Like, yeah. Charlie just straight up just... he took everyone apart in that middle section, I think all between after the boardwalk and the woods, got a second and a half into everyone. So it would be so cool to see Charlie just come back on top. But then, I don't know, like Omri's coming back. Omri's times at, he did a good time at Threadbow and a good time at the Kiwi National. So he might be straight back to it. I don't think he's lost a Fort William race. It's like one that's been in a long, long time.
Yeah.
He's missed some through injury, but so maybe there's Omri, Charlie, Kolb, and then there's endless Brits. Does Jordan Williams just come? He won the last one. He won his first ever elite race. Like, why not? Laurie Greenland, I think, is kind of back to like full pace. He like had a lot of health problems last year, but it seems like he's feeling good. I would like Ollie Davis to win because he's on the syndicate, and that would be pretty sick. Could be a cool start to his thing, or Shropshire's own Matt Walker. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Endless. But there you go. I've probably waffled on too long.
That was amazing.
Here are some predictions.
Yeah, we're doing a Vital Fantasy this year. I think all those picks people should keep in mind.
Yeah.
There's some solid picks right there.
We're trying.
Heck yeah.
But Cooper Webb's going to win the 450 title.
Hot take.
Stay tuned.
Radio voice.
Yes, exactly. All right, I'm back over here at Mondraker. Not talking to Dakota this time, but I have pulled Eric over here to chat about... Mondraker is now coming to the U.S., and I think for a lot of people, a lot of mountain bikers that are based in the U.S., we've all seen the brand probably racing, but it's tough to have seen them in the wild up to this point. So what was the motivating factor for you guys to come into this market, and what does that mean for consumers living here now?
Yeah, first of all, it's great to be here. This is a brand that's been around for about 22 years, based in Spain. And over that time, it's built an incredible business and reputation in Europe as a brand that's truly innovative and progressive and a high-performance brand, right? So Forward Geometry literally changed mountain bike geometry from racing through Fabian Borel, that evolution of longer reach, front center, you know, getting the wheels where they need to be, as Andrew Dodd says, getting that head angle to a place where riders just feel more confident, both up and down the mountain. The zero suspension platform being unique in terms of, you know, it's a VPP family, but shock driven both ends.
Yep.
So you get a bike that has great performance, pedaling, but also compliance, premium materials, and it's a privately owned company, right? One guy owns it, one guy runs it. In this day and age, not everybody can say that. So when you talk about coming to the U.S., obviously, it's been challenging a few years. The whiplash of COVID, you know, having somebody who's a seasoned bike industry person at the helm and holding the purse strings means that we can invest, we can make moves when the opportunity's there. And in this case, it made perfect sense to come to the U.S. The distributor model is tough. It's tough on everybody. And COVID just amplified those challenges. Inventory, pricing, availability, all of it. So coming here in the U.S., establishing the business from the ground up through IBDs only is going to give us a great platform to serve riders. We're going to be working with the best shops. We have a complete product line, only focused on mountain bikes, and with an eye towards serving the rider. So whether you ride a mountain bike or an EMTB, we have a complete range that's dialed and that will continue to evolve as our presence in the U.S. evolves. Also being here, service is a huge component. So we've opened an office in Boulder, Colorado. For some people, that's counterintuitive because Boulder's not necessarily known as a mountain bike destination or a mountain bike mecca. But for service and for communication being that central, you know, we're an hour and a half, 2-3 hours from anywhere.
Yeah.
If you have an issue and you need warranty support, it's a central time zone, so we're easy to get a hold of. If we need to get parts out to you, it's 1 to 3 days, pretty much to anywhere. So, you know, that's a little bit of the logic behind being in Boulder. And, you know, we're just happy to be here. Like, it's such a good product. It's a great brand, authentic people. Committed to the way forward, whether that's product, service, taking care of the rider.
Sweet. So IBDs are the main avenue that people are going to be able to get riding a Mondraker right now, correct?
Yep. Okay. We are 100% focused on IBDs.
Okay, cool. If somebody is living in an area where they're like, I gotta get that new Dune e-bike they just launched and they don't have a local shop that is carrying Mondraker yet, What's their avenue right now?
So we are not selling consumer direct at this time. As the business grows and evolves and we get the dealer network where we want it to be, we can start to open up distribution. You know, whether that's a click and collect model or figuring out how to get a dealer in that area, we'll see. But right now it's just, we want to work with the best dealers and where there's opportunity. You know, we're a more premium brand, so we're not competing on price points, we're not trying to be a value proposition, so it's really important to us that the bikes, the mix of bikes on the floor reflects that terrain, that region, that culture, and that we are making sure that riders have not just a great product, but great support.
Yeah.
And that just means working with retailers.
Sweet. No, I dig it. That's sweet.
It's a little bit old school, but it works.
Yeah, yeah. Tried and true. Oh, man. What else do I want to ask you? Because I've walked by here so many times, and you're a busy guy, popular. I've been cracking up because every time I walk by, you have a hand held on the easy up, and you're talking. You got a signature move.
It's been a great show.
Yeah.
It's Sea Otter's been really busy. The weather's been fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a great chance to meet people that already own the bikes.
Yeah.
To meet dealers that have been selling the bikes. And what's been really tangible for me is that people that have the bikes or have been selling the bikes love the bikes. They
Sweet.
Are a little bit unique.
Mm-hmm.
They are something different, and not everybody wants to ride the same.
Yeah, totally.
So for us, it's all about just getting butts on bikes, making the brand tangible, being able to tell some stories and build those connections.
Yeah, sweet. That's awesome. All right, what is one trend in mountain biking you think we could do without or that needs to go away?
Cool. I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of a, personally, I'm a big tent guy. Like, fundamentally, mountain bike's about freedom, right? And having fun. So, whatever your jam, you know? Like, ride your bike, be happy.
They're cheering for you.
Oh. Ryan.
Ryan Pinkerton just came back in with the second place in pro downhill today. He thought he was a... He was saying that he wasn't an enduro guy. I didn't know if he had the legs for it. And I'm like, I don't know if you know yourself well enough.
Yeah.
I dig that. You kind of pled the fifth with your trend, but I'll take it. I'll accept it.
Yeah, I mean, man, I don't even know.
I've gotten Bluetooth speaker on the backpack or on the bike. I've gotten gatekeeping or just being too exclusive, which I love as well.
Yeah.
I think... Sort of what you were.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, there's other things to sweat in life.
True.
What somebody's riding, maybe not one of them in the most places, you know?
Totally.
I'm not a Strava guy.
There we go. That's perfect.
And that's me.
Yeah, that's good.
Don't blow up my spot.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, man. Pleasure.
All right, I'm still at Mondraker, but I've got Dylan Lamar with me, who... Previously, I had a Commonsol for how many years?
I was a Commonsol for almost 7 years.
Wow. Yeah. And now with TLD?
Yep. Yeah, now with TLD full-time. I'm still in in good relations with Commonsol and doing some ambassador stuff for them. So, yeah, still keep in touch with those boys all the time.
Sick. We were going to talk about World Cups, but what were you doing with Commonsol and what are you doing with TLD now?
So with Commonsol, I was running the North American kind of race program, working with athletes, events, all that good stuff, and then working really close with our UCI teams, mostly with Commonsol Schwabe. And, just kind of youth development. Worked with Austin Dooley, Dylan Maples, Evan Madcap, all those boys, and hoping, good results from those guys coming up this year. So.
Sick, right on. And then what's the role of TLD now?
TLD, similar role, athlete manager for MTB, BMX, and most all amateur moto. So,
oh, cool.
Big roster.
The list is long.
The list is long, to say the least. But, it's been a crazy month starting with them. But, yeah, so much history over there. So cool watching Troy and all those guys in the back paint helmets and just seeing these little ideas come to life is pretty cool watching those guys work.
That's sweet. Does that mean you get to go to some moto events? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, still working out the schedule, but grew up racing moto when I was younger, and now to be able to go kind of be on the other side of it, like work inside, and it'll be cool.
Yeah,
I get to Loretta's and like watch these, as I've watched the mountain bike juniors like come up, like now watching some of the moto young kids come up, and it's pretty cool, man.
Yeah,
kids are pinned these days. It's scary.
I know, like we talk a lot about how stacked the junior class is, say World Cup downhill, but moto's always going to be on a different level because it's just gnarlier in general to race a dirt bike. And I haven't been to like an amateur national ever, but it always seems like there's like way more names in the pool coming up, and then they get kind of shuffled out going to be pros. But that'll be sick to go to.
No, I'm excited, and I'm just glad I'm not one of those young kids trying to get a career race mode, because dude, it is, again, it's crazy how fast they are, and there's so many of them going so fast. And it's cool to see. The level is high at a young age, to say the least.
Sweet. All right, well, I originally grabbed you because you've been going to World Cups for, like you said, the last 4 years, more or less all of them. This is a question I posed to John Hall, because he's in a similar position this year, not going to races anymore. I'm assuming you're not going to all the World Cups, or are you?
No, all of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. If you're not going to be fully a part of the whole World Cup circus anymore, what's one thing you'll miss being a part of that scene more, and what's one thing you're cool not to be doing moving forward?
As you said, the circus, and that's pretty much what is it. What it is the traveling circus. Yeah. And I think that's the big thing, is just seeing everyone. Like, you have familiar faces. Like, you know, we're away from our families for so long. Yeah. I guess kind of cliche to say, but like, the race family is your family for a lot of the year. And just seeing everything that goes into that last race run at the end of the weekend is, I mean, it's a lot. A lot of things happen behind the scenes. So I think I'm going to miss that, of just doing everything we can on the bike to make it as fast as we can with the riders, from the, you know, nutrition, the mental side, the prep,
You know, I mean, I would be on track, especially during like qualifying days. I'm on track for 6 to 8 hours sometimes.
Wow.
Just have like a couple snacks and water bottles. I'm just studying the track all day long. So like, I love that. I love it. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think just missing seeing everyone on a, you know, just in different parts of the world. But also a part of that, I am stoked to be at home a little bit more too, which will be really nice.
Yeah.
And Colorado is, I mean, there's so much good riding around. And so I'm so, yeah, stoked to spend some time at home this summer. Yeah.
I was chatting with George Brown from Crank Brothers earlier, and he's a trackside man at World Cups as well. And he introduced me to something I didn't know existed, which is Beeline Loamers. And I, oh gosh, I'm trying to remember which one he said was, I know he said Leo Gang was pretty good. He might have said Leger had a pretty good one, but would you bring a bike on track typically to like look at lines?
Uh-huh.
Is there a Beeline Loamer that stands out?
Oh man, I would say.
Or wait, B-Zone, sorry.
Yeah, B-Zone Loamers. I would say Linzerheide has some sneaky little loamers in there
that
is it's good, man. I would rather ride that than the track any day. Yeah. Yeah, it's all like the team managers, everyone, all of us in half shells just bombing down these loamers, like we're going way too fast than what we should be doing in shorts and a half shell. Like we're not the focus, like we at least need to get to the track to watch these guys. But dude, it's B-Zone loamers are a real thing.
Oh, that's sweet.
There should be like a B-Zone loamer like underground world championship of like some Strava segments or something.
No kidding. That would be pretty sick. All right, let me add it to the list. I'll add it to the list. Okay, Spomer grabbed you I think first day and had you do predictions for Fort William. But having a camera in your face maybe makes you rush to conclusion. And if people didn't watch that, who do you got for, you can do all four classes if you have names, but people that are, you're stoked to see you go racing in a few weeks here.
I mean, obviously all the American boys, it'd be good to see them get up in there, especially with the new format, you know, just to make it in that top 30 is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So nuts. So to see, obviously Dooley get up there, would be good. Maples, not just Common Soul Boys since I'm still with them, but, no, like,
well, you're close to him, you know?
Yeah, yeah, like, close to them. So I see what goes into it
the whole time.
I would say, I mean, just stoked to see Omri back on track. Again, now we're back to console, but it's just...
At Fort William, you kind of can't mention him.
I mean, he's so good there, you know? It's such an iconic race for him
and
years past. So, yeah, it'd be cool to see him on there. I mean, obviously, the top dogs, Loic's going to be up there, Lori, Loris.
Yeah.
So I just want to see everyone healthy and, like, have a really good, solid top 30 final. Yeah. And it's nice that we're going to have a normal finals day.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to be the qualifying and finals in a day, because that kind of took away some of the excitingness of the finals.
100%.
So to have... to get to the top 30 in the first two days and then, or first day, and then just the full finals will be good. Elite women, I mean, Valley's going to be on one as usual. I truly think she's going to be the one to beat. Cami, she's going to be up there. Miriam's back on. We'll see how she's doing. You know, there, I know she's feeling pretty good, but you know, we'll obviously come race time, we'll see.
Yep.
Juniors. Dude, it's a lot. I mean, I think I'd go with Asa. The kid is on another level. And the two new juniors with comments on Muckoff, too. I'm drawing a blank on their names.
I don't know their names either, but George mentioned them as well.
Yeah. Those kids are pinned. Super, super fast. Junior women. I feel bad saying this, but I don't know any big names that's going to be.
I know. But
junior girls this year. I know some that'll be in there next year that's like 1 year too young, but a lot of them aged out.
Yeah. Like, is Aries Van Leuven still, is she going to her second year, or did she age out as well?
I think she aged out.
Yeah. I feel bad too, because I should know it, but I'm like, that's next week. That's when I'm diving in spreadsheets. I'm learning everyone's name.
Yeah. I guess I gotta dive into it now. Shoot.
I think that's one of the coolest things about the junior field in the last so many years, is that every couple of years you get like a whole new field that comes in with a lot of names you maybe haven't heard. It reminds me of like 250 class and Supercross. Yep, a similar vibe where the first like A1, you're like, I don't recognize half these names, and a couple rounds in, you're like, holy crap. There are some really fast little kids running around.
Dude, it's crazy. Actually, the girl that, I should know her name, on Trek from New Zealand.
I should know her name.
That one.
Yeah. Yes, that
she,
one.
Yeah, she, God, she's looking good. Yeah, super fast on track, and I think she'll be up there for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I want it to come to me what her name is. Is it last name like Ernest or something like that? Or is that somebody else? Is it Sasha?
Sasha Ernest, yes. Yes, that's
made it.
Made
it. We got there.
We got a junior woman.
There we go. Perfect.
Yeah. Right. No, it'll be good, man. It's, yeah, like I said, everyone seems to be healthy, riding good, a lot of new teams. It'll be cool to see Dak get up there. New team over at Mondraker, and he's looking good. Obviously, yeah. Had some good results over the past few U.S. national rounds.
Yeah, yeah, he's looking
strong. Last month, so yeah, it'd be cool to see him finally pull off that coveted win.
It'll happen. It's coming. Yeah. It's coming.
Yeah.
Anything TLD related that you can mention coming in 24 or happening this year you're stoked on, or?
I would say I'm just more excited, like working with all the cool designs on the kits and helmets and colorways. Almost feel like how Moto, where they have a new kit every round and you don't know, it's kind of like you just don't know what they're going to be wearing the next round. So we're doing that with Commonsaw Dorval team and Canyon Factory team. So yeah, they're going to be in a fresh kit, fresh new design like every race. So it's cool. Going to get a little bit more kind of Moto feel to it. So yeah, definitely keep a lookout for those. And there's some really, really sick looking stuff coming out. Yeah.
Heavy.
Yeah, this guy. Yeah, outside of that, Intense Factory, working with that team, Joe Breeden, those boys. Yeah, Ryder Lawrence will be his first year junior. So
I think he's a bit of a sleeper. I know he's coming off a few arm injuries, it sounds like, but still, that kid has a lot of talent.
He does. He does. And as with juniors, it takes time.
Yeah.
Some of them come out swinging immediately, but the majority of them take a little time. And I think he's going to be one that may take a little time once he finds his speed and that final little piece of the puzzle that he's looking for. But he'll be up there.
Sick.
So
cool.
Yeah, man.
All right, man. I appreciate your time.
Appreciate you.
Sweet.
Keep listening to Vital.
Yeah. I'm over here at Fox. I'm bugging Brandon as I head out of the show. So Sunday, last day. But you guys have some cool, exciting goggles coming out soon. Why don't you kind of run us through what the goal is with those?
Yeah, so the overall goal with this is to offer, you know, premium eyewear protection with the benefits of wearing glasses and goggles at the same time. So it's the new PureView goggle glass, right? Okay. So ultimate eye protection, injected polycarbonate lens, so really good impact protection, triple layer foam for any kind of sweat and debris that might be running down over the eyebrow, so it keeps it all out of the eyes, but open-ended ventilation on the bottom and sides, so it never fogs up, so you get max ventilation, it's breathable, you know, to where you're not just exhausting yourself on your ascend. So you don't have to feel like you have to take it off.
Mm-hmm.
So you're always going to have eyewear protection as you're ascending. And then as soon as you get to the peak, you're ready to descend.
Sweet.
Without having to feel like you'd have to take them off, clear them out, or you feel gassed, you know, because you weren't getting the kind of ventilation and breathability you needed when you would normally wear a goggle. Comes in a premium carrying case. Comes with extra lenses, extra nose pieces, extra straps. So it really is kind of like a premium package when you buy it. It comes in at an aggressive price point that most people are already investing with eyewear, whether it's a sunglass or a goggle. It's right there at that $120 retail price point, MSRP. So super affordable for the kind of package you're getting.
Yeah.
And really, that's kind of how we're innovating the eyewear this year. Here at Sea Otter 2024.
Sweet, right on. When is this available right now?
So this will be available in June.
Okay.
Yep, it'll be available for all your summer rides this year. And then going into the fall, winter, you're ready to rock and roll as it gets a little moist and
sweet.
Precipitation starts to build up.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Awesome. Kind of one piece of eyewear protection to do it all.
That's so. It. That's sweet. Exactly right.
Perfect.
Pushing the limits.
Hell yeah. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. Sweet.
Okay, I thought I was leaving the venue, but I've trapped Kieran McKinnon from Santa Cruz Bicycles into talking with me. Kieran, why don't you just define what it is you do for Santa Cruz?
I'm a product manager, and I focus on ride quality and suspension.
Okay. What does that mean day to day and what you work on?
Basically what that means is I follow the bikes through development and try to make sure the end product is good to ride, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty simple.
Is it pretty simple?
it's complicated at times, but the definition is simple, yeah.
When you talk about ride quality of a bike, what is the goal, and does that change depending on the model?
It does change depending on the model. Mm-hmm. We think a lot about the intended use case
okay.
when designing the bike, obviously. And yeah, like, obviously you're going to want your Nomad to have different qualities than your Blur mm-hmm. or whatever. So, yeah, there's a lot of thought that goes into that. And, yeah, I don't know. Each bike is a very different project with different goals.
Okay. We've talked about this in the past, and maybe something that people don't think about, but like your guys' bikes have been iterations of themselves for a couple of years now. Like each, what do you want to call it, generation sort of evolves on the previous one, but it's not drastic changes from one generation to the next. But I know a lot of that has to do with, you can talk about this as much as you do or don't, but like, you know, when you guys take on, okay, we're in model year 27, going to update X model. Where do you start and how do you like start working on like progressing a bike from where it is to where you want it to be? And like, at what point do you say, okay, we got to stop working on this bike and like say, this is cool, this is where we want to be with this model, and like start pushing it to consumers?
Yeah, I think what we do at Santa Cruz is we try to make products at a rate which gives people the opportunity to be on the latest product often.
Okay.
I would say that those timelines drive when we start and stop on products more than it being like, oh, this is, you know, the greatest thing we've ever done. Let's ship it now, you know, mm-hmm. after 4 years of tweaking on it.
Mm-hmm.
We try to refresh the products fairly often. Sometimes it's not like super crazy changes, but we want to make sure the consumer has the best bike we can make as often as possible.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. That makes sense. What bike that you have worked on in the last couple of years are you most stoked or proud of or enjoy riding the most?
V10, no question.
Okay.
No question. That's I don't know. Obviously, I come from downhill racing. I've raced a V10 like 99% of my racing life. Santa Cruz supported me when I was racing. It was like the V10-8 was like the first version of the V10 that I really was able to have a significant amount of input in, and I'm super proud of that bike. And yeah, just the whole process, like we were able to take a little bit more time to make sure that we were really stoked on it by the time it came out. And yeah, it was just a really cool opportunity to work on a bike that meant a lot to me.
Sweet. That's dope. I like that. Okay, you guys use VPP across basically all your platforms, and if somebody is riding a Santa Cruz right now, what is a few tips for say like rear shock setup to get your guys' bikes performing the best? I know it could be broad because different models might have different intricacies that help them perform best, but if someone's getting one of your guys' bikes and you're like, this is where you kind of like the ballpark you want to be in to make sure it's performing best, what might that look like?
I think the best thing you could do is just go to the website and see what the setup guide says.
Okay.
I make them, so personal plug. they're not always like perfectly right, but I do my best.
Okay.
Generally, 30% sag works, and I don't know. That's usually what we shoot for in terms of spring pressure. I don't know. It depends on the bike, but usually if you hit that 30% mark and kind of do the rebound and compression by feel, it's you'll be in a general ballpark. That's good.
Sick. How do you guys make the recommended settings for shock tunes and all that? Like, is that just you out doing 1,000 laps being like, one more click of compression, this is who that person might be? Is there an algorithm? Is it AI?
You're not that far off. Okay. No, I'll once we like decide on the spec shock and fork, I'll honestly usually start with my personal setup. I'll get a feel for what that feels like in terms of rebound valving and compression. And then honestly, dude, I'll like basically try and match that rebound to like varying spring rates. So we'll have different people of different weights check sag to confirm the sag is correct and the spring rate is correct for their body weight recommendation. And then I'm just like pushing on the bikes and getting a gauge for the rebound. And compression, like we'll use like different test riders for that, just to make sure that we're on the right trajectory with that. But typically we don't see a lot of variance in terms of compression. It's more about matching the rebound damping to the spring rate we choose.
Sweet. Okay, Fort Williams coming up. Who are your picks for all four classes? You got to give me elite men, elite women, junior men, junior women. And I will say, from asking this question to quite a few people, a lot of people have pled the fifth on juniors because we're in a little bit of a transition year and a lot of people have moved up to elite. But who are you stoked to see go racing here at the first round?
I'm a little embarrassed to say, but I'm not sure I know anybody in junior men's or junior women's right now.
It's okay. You're not the only one.
Let me think. Elite men, Nico Mullally. I want to see him win. That'd be sweet.
I like that. Do it for Dale.
Yeah, do it for Dale. Women's, Nina Hoffman, obviously, Syndicate.
Okay, someone who's not doesn't ride for Santa Cruz.
No answer, I'm sorry.
The man's loyal. The man's loyal to the brand. Darn, I had one more question.
Laurie Greeland for the Santa Cruz.
Oh, okay, yeah. Do you just want to throw Jackson, even though he's not racing?
Yeah, Jackson Goldstein.
Okay, good. I think that's everybody. I think we hit everybody. Well, that concludes another Sea Otter Classic. I hope everybody has enjoyed these podcasts. They were definitely something different but fun to try and do. I had to call Sea Otter my hindsight event because it's hard not to leave here feeling like I could have done more or I should have covered the show in a different way, but I genuinely enjoyed chatting with everybody the past few days, being out here fully submersed in our beloved industry, getting to show everybody the tech, chat with a bunch of really cool, awesome people. And I think we're really fortunate to have a bunch of people in industry that are passionate about bicycles and passionate about developing products and giving all of us riders an experience that we can cherish and enjoy. So hopefully you get to hear about some cool new bike parts and hear from some cool people making those bike parts. That's a wrap on Sea Otter for 2024. Make sure to check the site for more photo galleries from Johan. He was out here crushing it the whole week, capturing all the cool and exciting new tech around the venue, as well as Johnny on Instagram and Spomer making videos the first 2 days. And a big shout out to Todd and Jake. Those are our sale dudes who make Vital a functioning brand and website. And thank you to everybody out there who tagged along and listened to this. Thanks for supporting independent mountain bike media. And I look forward to continuing to make rad content for everybody the rest of the year. Cheers.